Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Alex, they've almost got me convinced. Drew McIntyre's beating Roman Reigns at Clash at the Castle. A two-part video package. Drew McIntyre in the main event against Sami Zayn, getting beaten down by Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns acting in a way that conveys he's more rattled and threatened by Drew than a typical opponent. Have they swayed you at all into thinking this two-year celebration by Reigns could be the last celebration before he loses the next day to Drew?
I'm more swayed than I was before. It's funny you bring up those video packages, though, because those were really well produced. I had a really bad storm here, so the first one cut out a little bit, but I did catch most of it. And the second one, I saw the whole thing.
Yeah.
Those packages might end up being really bad if he loses.
Explain. Yeah.
Well, they're doing a great job of rebuilding him, right? Which we've all pretty much agreed was a necessary thing. You know, Javier and I debated a couple weeks ago where it went off the rails, but regardless of what you think it was, we all agree that at some point he went off the rails, right?
Yeah.
So the rebuild needed to happen, and I think over the last, we'll call it 4 or 5 weeks, they've done a good job of that. However, painting him as this babyface and this super intense second part of the promo tonight where he drops, you know, the bleeped out F-bomb and looks into the camera and tells Reigns he's going to kick his head off. If he loses, I don't know how you come back from that. Like, if you're the big conquering babyface and you go into your hometown and you can't beat this guy, that's pretty much it, right?
I am thinking they are making it so obvious, I'm skeptical they'll do it, because they've gone so far with it. But doesn't Karrion Kross figure in here? Isn't Karrion Kross the guy who cost Drew that moment somehow? And then that is where Drew is enraged by that, and that sets forward his feud with Karrion Kross this fall. But you've got Drew with a rematch at a, quote, bigger show someday. I'm not taking away what you just said, because it's the stadium setting in his hometown with this music video and the rehabilitation of Drew feels like it's working, you know, at least as best as we can see. But if Karrion Kross does get involved, does that mitigate the point you're making at all?
It does and doesn't, because the issue with that is they haven't been in this place and at a big stadium in 30 years, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if you can do that show and have a finish like that. Like, do the lights go out and Cross and Scarlett are there and then Reigns spears them and pins them? Like, I don't know. I think that's just going to piss people off. Like, I think you have to be really, really careful, because this is a different pay-per-view. Like, if this was like Extreme Rules or something stupid like that, and they did like the Finn Balor thing, then I'm kind of cool with it, and it is what it is. But they're building this as this guy's big moment, and I just don't know if I don't. I think that could be very damaging, regardless of what it is. I get what you're saying to set up the next program, but it's hard to see a scenario where anything other than him winning the title doesn't hurt him.
Yeah, I mean, they might be doing, and that thought crossed my mind watching SmackDown. They're doing a great job building this match up. And if I'm starting to think, hey, maybe Drew is primed and ready to end Reigns and the title reign of Roman Reigns, is that setting up his fans for disappointment? But I speak out against underhyping something ahead of time because you don't think fans will like the finish, because I don't like telegraphing that. And yeah. I think fans can handle the agony of defeat more than sometimes, in my inclination here, is to say, then Vince McMahon gives them credit for. We're past that era, but that would be what I would normally say, is Vince McMahon doesn't give the fans enough credit to deal with a loss. So the psychology of that, I don't like. Also, the same thing with not hyping a big match on a TV show and just having it come out cold, because you're going to either have the match be short or do a non-finish. And to me, it still diminishes the value of that match if you don't hype it ahead of time and you just bring it out there cold. And I think that the AJ Lashley match on Raw on Monday was an example of that. Not a perfect, not a great example, but a good example of that, where they're like, well, I don't think they're like the finish. We're just going to not hype it ahead of time, because we don't want people to be disappointed. That is not what they're doing here. If Drew is going to lose by clean, or because of Karrion Kross, or because of Usos, because of Sammy, or who knows what, if it's shenanigans and he still loses, I think if I'm going to that show in Cardiff and I'm a Drew McIntyre fan, I don't know that there's a shenanigan that isn't going to, you know, take the wind out of my sails or break my heart. You know, however I look at the Drew McIntyre quest and his journey and what this means in his hometown, it's kind of like, you know, losing the Super Bowl in your home stadium, you know, when it happened to be the year you were hosting. You know, Drew earned this, but, you know, storyline-wise, it wasn't a given he'd be in the world title main event, and he is. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's a bit of a quandary for Paul Levesque and company to make sure they tell the story carefully. I think it's a good point.
That, and I think it's time that they make a decision one way or the other. If he loses by nefarious means, then we can all sit here and say, okay, maybe Drew is their guy, but not right now. Mm-hmm. But how many times are we going to say that with this guy? At some point, and we talked about this on my show that we'll talk about soon, but at some point, like every other promoter has, Triple H is going to pick a babyface to build around. And that's probably going to be the guy that ends up beating Reigns. Mm-hmm. He has quite a few options here, but I think this is going to give us a big clue if it is Drew that he's going to choose.
What about the angle did you like and not like at the end of the show? You know, like what was your thought of the way that the Drew-Sammy match went, and then Reigns attacking Drew after Drew's victory, and the Usos and Sammy joining in a beatdown, and then Reigns trash-talking Drew and then ending the show sitting on a chair that was on Drew's arms, neck, and chest. Did you love it? Did you like it? Was there anything you didn't like about it?
Oh, no, I loved the end segment. I thought that was excellent. I like the gang-style beatdowns by the Usos where Reigns doesn't really do much. I think it's really effective and comes off as a little more realistic when the henchmen do all the work. It's like a Batman villain situation almost. And I like that. And that the image to end this show tonight was very, very powerful. And we had the McIntyre image last week that the camera guy kind of missed, or however you want to look at that. But when you put those two images next to each other, which one was stronger in your opinion? And I have to say for me, it was tonight.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Well, let's pause. Let's introduce the show and let's start talking to callers about the build to Clash at the Castle, especially Drew and Reigns, but other content on the show too. Some important things, some not so important things filled out the rest of the 2 hours. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, August 26th, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, and I'm joined by Alex McDonald. Alex, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Thanks for having me, Wade. Good to be here with you.
Absolutely, and I want to take a minute for you to plug your latest PW Torch daily cast, the PW Torch 90s past cast. About 30 years ago, bungee cords were all the thing, Alex. That was like I don't know if my memory is right or wrong on this, but I sort of feel like the early 90s is when like the idea of leaping off of a high place attached to a bungee cord and looking like you're going to go splat, but it just you get to the end and it bounces you back up was all the rage. I know I have some sort of nightmare scenario where, you know, there's a wrong measurement. I can't remember what happened. And you know, there was 5 feet not accounted for and people started dying from that, but I don't want to bring the show down too much, but pro wrestling got in on this craze. That was a topic on this week's show that just went up. Alex, talk about your show. Talk about this week's episode in particular.
This week's episode does include the bungee cord match that Wade brought up. We did not spend too much time on it because it's horrible. And both of us sat through it and unfortunately had to each spend, I don't know, the thing's only like 8 minutes long and it's on YouTube, so anybody can find it. But anyway.
Yeah, and who was in it?
Oh, you're killing me. Chaz and the other guy's name was Dane or something like that. The other guy's a nobody. They're both nobodies, but it's Chaz has been prevalent.
Steven Dane,
you're right.
Yeah.
But other than that, we're marching towards SummerSlam 1992. So my Superstars report every week kind of gets us closer to that. We've also been discussing the news in WCW, which is all about the Bill Watts era and the transition from Sting to now Ron Simmons. Another really cool thing that came up on our show last night that we actually didn't talk about ahead of time, but a trade that was proposed in 92 that would have sent Sting to the WWF in exchange for Ted DiBiase, Ric Flair, and Shawn Michaels. We disagreed on which side of the trade was better, and that was a fun conversation. And we even got into who we would trade from WWE and AEW, because my co-host, Patrick Moynihan, does not watch WWE at all. So that was fun. but basically, we're just going in a time machine every week, going back 30 years to that week's edition of the PW Torch and reading what Wade had to say back then and agreeing with him and also tearing a lot of it to pieces. So it's a fun show.
Wait, I don't like that second part. that's part of the fun. So, yeah, check it out, everybody. It's free. It's not a VIP exclusive show. It is available on the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup, and all you have to do is search PW Torch and subscribe for free, and you'll get that show. Okay, so we got a lot to talk about SmackDown, and you can join us if you're listening to our live stream here. The number to call is 347-215-8558. That is 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on the switchboard. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That's wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. We might have a shorter show today. We don't have an on-site correspondent because they're taping next week's episode now, I believe. Maybe they take some before and some after, but I think the whole thing is happening after because they're going to be traveling next week for the Clash of the Castles. So I don't think we'll have any results or a caller by then, by the time we go off the air. That doesn't mean we still don't have plenty to talk about. And we'll start marching through calls. And we're going to begin with Sean in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, welcome to the show. Good to have you kick things off. We got you at the beginning. We got Javier coming up for a roundtable segment at the end, the aforementioned Javier Machado. But Sean, this is your time. How you doing?
Wade, Alex, I'm doing good. I'm glad to be back. I missed you guys for 3 weeks. I was like, when am I going to get back on this show? And it was funny because I was actually traveling back home tonight, but I got to watch SmackDown as I was driving home, which might not be the smartest thing to do in the world, by the way. But I don't care. I had to watch it, and I wanted to talk about it. So how are you guys doing? Good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you. I will not comment on your safety your safety practices.
But it was hands-free. I had it on the seat, and I was watching it when I had a chance. You know, I was
listening
to it.
Yeah, no, I know.
I got to see it. But it's not good. I tell people that's not good. It's not a good idea, and you need to be safer. And so that's a lesson to kids out there. Don't things that some adults decide they want to do, don't always do that. It's not a good thing. But, Alex, how are you, man? Good to talk to you again.
I'm good, Sean. I'm glad you decided to return when I'm on the show. You know, I listen every week, and I was waiting for you, so I was wondering when you'd be back. So I'm glad it's now.
Yeah, I'm back, and I wanted to say I actually missed last week, but I'll go back and watch it when I get the opportunity. But as far as tonight, it was a good show. I wanted to kind of just go off what you guys were talking about with Drew. I know you guys already kind of talked about it, but I wanted to kind of give my two cents. It's been a little while. I think, the video packages were really good. I mean, very, very good. I mean, it showed, you know, if you don't know Drew's story, which, I mean, most people probably do, but if you don't, it's really good to know where he's come from. And he said, when I got let go, that was the best thing that ever happened to me, to get, you know, and to bring up all that, talk about all that, show all that. The only hard thing for me is what you guys talked about is, as far as Drew, if he does lose, it is hard to come back just from the standpoint of they don't tell you because, you know, they don't want you to know, but Drew's already lost to him twice. They don't want you to know that, but he has. Some dumb match that they put on for whatever reason, and it was just a whatever match, and then, you know, to lose at Survivor Series, but they never want you to remember that they had him champion versus champion at Survivor Series. I'm like, I hope they get rid of that. But anyway, I think this really hurts him to lose to Roman three times. I just think that really hurts him. And I think they've rebuilt him from what you guys were talking about. They've done a really good job. But I just don't know if they want Drew to be the guy to beat Roman. I just think they have other plans for that. And I think, you know, I worry about Drew. One thing I will say, too, and you guys didn't bring it up, and I will – When he brought out the sword, I was like, oh, man, I thought you might have been done with that. Like, I don't want the sword in his, you know, itinerary. I don't want him to bring that out. I just think the fans don't care. I mean, the fans are still behind him. We're still behind him. But he doesn't need the sword. He just get it away from him. I don't know why they bring that back. What did you guys think? Did you just kind of shrug like, oh, it just kind of is what it is? Or were you kind of as sad as I was when he brought the sword out?
Well, first of all, I'll say Karrion Kross is making his in-ring debut next week, even though he's already, you know, wrestled, you know, in WWE. So they're kind of being a little bit cute with that. The idea of them, at least they're not – so my point of that is at least they're not saying Drew versus Roman for the first time ever. You know, so, I mean, I am fine with selective memory for the prudent purpose of hyping a match. If you're, you know, they, Alex, clearly are not working into the story they're telling at this point, the history between Drew and Roman. They're not saying it's first time ever. They're not being dishonest, but they're not volunteering that background. So first talk about that. And then also the return of the sword and how you think it's a big deal that, you know, Are you down on it as other people? And do you think it helps that he just brings it out occasionally rather than as consistently as he did?
So, okay, I'm going to go all the way back to the WrestleMania 35 comment. I was actually at that WrestleMania and saw that match. I personally think that these characters have changed so much since then that I actually wouldn't even count that in the lexicon between the two of them, because we are so far removed from that for both guys. That was right when Reigns got back from the cancer thing, and McIntyre was like a mid-card heel who hadn't gotten the push yet. Like, I get what you're saying, Sean, but I don't think we can count that. The Survivor Series one, yeah, that counts. On your note about how you hope they get rid of that, I would assume they'll get rid of it because I don't think Reigns can wrestle himself. With that said,
yeah.
Moving on, as far as that goes, I get why they're not bringing it up, because the Survivor Series match was definitive. Like, the finish of that was he just choked him out, right? There wasn't like a bunch of extracurricular, was there?
I don't think so. I would want to refresh my memory. Sean, do you remember the finish of that? I think I remember it being pretty clean.
Yeah, from what I remember, it was very clean, very clean, very clean.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought
which
so,
is,
too.
You know, which is good. You know, I mean, there's no, you know, you don't need
right.
Shenanigans always, yeah.
So that might be worth bringing up. I at least wish Reigns would bring it up, to your point. But, the other one, I wouldn't really promote this as, like the Brock thing where, you know, they've wrestled seven times and this is finally the end of it. And I don't think we're there yet with these two. Maybe we'll get there eventually. I don't know about now. As far as the sword goes, I'm totally fine with the sword if it's just a part of his entrance. I'm totally fine with that. I don't like any instance where he has it side of that and threatens to murder people with it. That's a problem. You can't, and the cutting the ropes and all that stuff's got to stop. I wish they would just go back, and I know they can't because they revamped the stage, but the original idea with the sword where he would just stick it in the stage and then you didn't see it again, that was like the original purpose of this, and that was perfect. But since they can't do that, now he has to take it all the way with him and it sits in the corner. But again, that's fine as long as he's not swinging it at people, because it's just not realistic. He's not going to hurt anybody with the sword.
Yeah.
Let me jump in because I've got a correction on our recollection. Here's a report from Survivor Series. Reigns went for a spear, but Drew – this is from my written report – but Drew kicked him. Drew charged at him, but Reigns speared him. Drew kicked out again. It felt like the finish. Reigns looked up and snarled at the ref. Reigns looked over at Joe, who said he'd seen this before. Cole acknowledged that it was a message sent to Joe. Reigns went for a spear, but Drew caught him with a claymore. In the process, the ref went down and was knocked to the floor. So we got a ref pump. Drew called over to check on the ref. Jey Uso ran to the ring. Drew knocked him off the ring apron. Drew yelled at him to get out. Reigns gave Drew a low blow. Jey then entered and gave Drew a super kick. Reigns gave Drew a Superman punch and then applied a guillotine. Drew resisted a bit before passing out, and the ref called for the bell. Cole said if it wasn't for Jey Uso, who in the hell knows what have happened in this one.
Wow. Okay.
Okay.
Well, so that changed.
Drew
that
was way more protected than I remember.
Yeah. I honestly, I think there was a different Drew match that we were thinking of, or that I was, in terms of, you know, where I thought it was more of a clean. But anyway, doesn't even matter. That is the and they won 25 minutes and just had, you know, it was a long match. And my analysis at the time was Drew looked like he absolutely was Reigns' equal, if not better, considering the ref bump. And I said that's a match people pay to see a rematch for down the line.
You gave it
four
and a half or 4 3/4 too, right?
4.5, yep.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the last 10 minutes were fantastic. It was maybe longer than it had to be, but man, it just picked up steam at the end. That second half was amazing. So anyway, go ahead, Sean. I felt like I needed to look that up because I wasn't sure. I remember the guillotine passing out, but not the the super kick and the low blow.
Yeah, I imagine Javier's just like oh gosh, I remember this whole match like backwards and forwards. I hear him in my mind thinking like, oh, I know what happened. Like, let me tell you what. But no, here's what I wanted to say about Drew too was going back on what I said before, I do like the fact that they didn't, you know, of course, show his title reign, because that's why I'm like almost thinking in the back of my mind that they want him to win, only because maybe they're thinking in their mind, like, okay, he had the title in the Thunderdome era. A lot of people don't remember that anymore. It seems like forever ago, and it was. I mean, it's been a long time ago. I mean, it's been over a year. I mean, since we've been back in front of crowds already. So, I mean, you have that out where, okay, you show, you know, they showed the videos of him at the Royal Rumble and all that kind of stuff, but they didn't show him with the title and any of that kind of stuff because they don't want you to see that, because they want you to think, okay, this is this memorable thing to get him to the championship. I mean, that's why I'm just worried. Here's a question in my mind. Where do you guys think, okay, if Drew does lose, like let's say that Drew loses clean, which I don't think will happen, but let's say it does for our argument's sake. You know, where can he go? Because to me, Drew is he's an okay heel. I think he's a decent heel, but I just think he's so likable as a baby face. He's such a great baby face. Like you said, Alex, earlier, is there any, where does he go? Like, I don't see where he can go.
Alex, what do you think?
Honestly, regardless of what happens with this feud, I really don't want to see a bunch of return matches with these guys. I think they're better off with what they did with the Survivor Series with the one-off, and Drew gets screwed, and then they kind of move on, and then maybe they revisit it again down the road when they build it up again. As far as Drew goes, though, the new Kevin Owens would be an interesting feud. If you remember, he had a one-off. I think his first title defense was against Seth, and it was just a one-off, and it was fantastic. It was a really, really good match, but they never went back to it. Like, and still now, we're like 2 years later, and they still haven't gone back to it. So there's that. And then, I mean, it's going to be tricky navigating the waters depending on what the landscape looks like by that time. But you have Cody, too. So I think there are options for Drew, just like I think there's options for Reigns, too. You know, on the Reigns side, we still haven't seen him against Lashley. We still haven't seen him do anything with AJ Styles. We haven't seen, you know, also throwing Cody into the mix. Things can get very interesting as far as that goes. But the obvious place Drew goes after this is what Wade's been touting, and I'm not super excited.
I'm not sure touting is the word. That might not be quite where I stand, but
at least I'm predicting championing.
Yes.
But it's logically probably Karrion Kross. Not that I'm banging the table for that, but that's logically probably what's coming.
I looked up tout just to be sure I'm not being hard on you, Alex. Tell me what you think. According to Oxford, whatever comes up first on Google. Attempt to sell something, typically by pestering people in an aggressive and bold manner. I apologize. I might tout VIP membership now and then, but I'm not touting Karrion Kross. That's true. All right.
Fair enough.
I might have touted your podcast earlier, Alex. I wouldn't say that. I wasn't aggressive. Maybe I was bold. Anyway, go ahead, Sean. I don't even know if we answered all that you asked.
No, that's pretty much. Like I said, I think tonight, as far as tonight, they did a really good job. I thought the match was fine for what it was. The angle at the end was fantastic. I mean, great visual at the end. Like Roman just, you know, I'm the baddest ass guy here. Beat me. You got to take it from me. Like I love when he brings that stuff up. I just think it's great. But I wanted to switch gears and just kind of go into a little bit about the Sheamus Gunther, you know, the interaction. I thought it was really good. I thought it was really good. I'm excited about the match. When Zach was talking last week, I mean, I'm excited about the match. First question I had was, do you think that Sheamus is leaning a little more baby face, or do you think this is a way to turn him baby face officially? Because we've been kind of – I know we've talked about it before, and I'm clamoring for it too. Like, I'm at the point where I want Sheamus as a good guy. Like, I like him a lot. I've always thought he was pretty underrated in the ring. I mean, the stuff with Roman back in that day was kind of like, That was just a bad time because everybody just couldn't stand Roman for what he was doing at that point for being pushed. But I think now he's in a good place. His matches are – I mean, we know Sheamus and Gunther are going to put on a hell of a match. It's going to be hard-hitting as all, you know, to no end. And do you think this is – did you like what they did tonight? And did you like – or do you think this is going babyface for Sheamus maybe after this?
I think Sheamus has been turned a lot, and I think he can be effective in both roles. I think you want to – if you turn him for a really good reason and be ready to keep him a baby face for a long time. So whatever they do, if they keep him heel, that's fine. If they turn him, make sure it's not just for a feud or two, but because you really believe that you can get something out of him long-term as a baby face. The match he had with Drew, the match he's going to have with Gunther in all likelihood, it's Sheamus at his best. It's hard to not appreciate that. I think I'm a fan of Sheamus. I think he delivers. And I think his promos are better than they were in the past. And I think they're versatile in the sense that his personality and his promos and his ring style absolutely can work as a babyface. And I do think tonight was him wanting the fans to cheer him, which I think is likely to happen against Gunther. But I'm not quite sure I'm ready to sacrifice Gunther for Sheamus if the idea is we'll turn Sheamus babyface and maybe have him go after Reigns or something like that. I think Gunther against babyface Drew or whoever has – it's worth protecting Gunther because he hasn't been defined down and he hasn't been around as long, and I just think he's really good. I did really like the segment tonight. I love that they locked eyes, had a stare down in the middle of the ring while the other three were brawling and fighting, and they didn't blink or twitch or anything. I thought it was a great idea visually, and I thought they pulled it off really well. Alex, over to you for all of that.
I agree with most of that. I'm going to start with the Sheamus babyface thing. I'm in favor of it, but I don't necessarily think that's what they're doing. I think what's happening here is they ended up with this match kind of by happenstance because just, and I've talked about this a bunch of times, but the SmackDown roster is very heel heavy. So when you need new opponents for somebody, this is what's going to happen. So I don't think this is a quote-unquote turn for Sheamus. I just think they're trying to make him slightly more likable than Gunter, so he gets cheered for and Gunter doesn't. With that said, though, I'm in favor of a babyface turn, but I agree with Wade. You can't do a thing where he turns babyface and beats, I don't know, Karrion Kross and then loses to Reigns and then goes back heel again. It's going to have to be for a while, which would be a good thing for him because, quite frankly, as a heel, I don't think there's a lot left for Sheamus to do. As a babyface, though, you know, you do have something maybe prolonged with Gunter. You do have Reigns. I brought them up before, but you also have Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens in a situation if they switch brands. Other than that, the only babyface that Sheamus hasn't worked with as a heel at this point is Cody. That's like the only one, unless it's like Gargano or something.
Yeah.
You know, there's just
that could be good, but I mean, yeah.
As far as the segment goes, I did not expect them to go that direction with this at all. And I was really pleasantly surprised with the fact that, one, they did it, and two, how well it came off. The brawling all around them while they just stand there like they don't care because these underlings don't matter was maybe slightly damaging, but the visual was good, so I'll forgive it. And I can't wait. You know, Leander Beatty comments on my stuff every week, and he's been asking for Gunter Sheamus, and I was so excited that he's going to get his wish, you know, when it was announced last week. And I think Wade and I are the biggest Sheamus fans on the torch, so anything that gets him more spotlight is a good thing for me. And that segment tonight, if that ending segment had not been as strong as it was, that would have been the segment of the show. That was fantastic.
Great. Sean, anything else for us?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, too, is I mean, Sheamus and Gunther will make me like that match. But, you know, again, I still don't like two heels battling each other because, again, who do we root for? I mean, we're rooting for them. We both love them in the ring, and, like, we enjoy them. But, again, we're not supposed to root for either one of them because they're both heels. Well, I wish they would, you know, even though the roster's thin, I still wish they would get away from that because, again, it's just it's not hard to have – it's bad to have a non-rooting interest, really, in the match if you're technically going watching them wrestle. It's like I'm not supposed to like either one of them. But it's going to be great. I liked everything they did tonight. And then I wanted to say when Sonya was backstage going into the match with the Fatal 4-Way when she said, you know, Morgan, Megan, whatever your name is, Sonya is like – I just – again, they're just, you know – they need to do something with her. I mean, she's too talented to not do anything with her. I don't know where they're going with her, but they got to have something planned. I don't know what, but going back to the women's tag team stuff, I wanted to ask you first what you guys thought of the Fatal 4-Way second chance. Cause number one, there was nothing to really discuss because they went like 2 minutes. Now, again, I know they had the other match that they were going to do later to see who was going to face Io and Dakota, but I just give them something. I mean, let them show what they can do, regardless if you think they're good or not. Like, 2 minutes for a Fatal 4-Way tag team match is just – I'm sorry. Like, what did you guys think about that first? I just didn't like that at all.
I mean, I get why they did it, but I don't like it, Alex. I mean, they don't think it's going to hold viewership. They have a lot of other things they want to fit onto the show. It wasn't a master plan. It had to do with an injury, so they just needed to explain why Natalya and Sonya got back in the mix. I'm not against occasionally having matches that are shorter than you expect. We saw that with Moxley and Punk earlier this week. But, you know, yeah, it's it's just hard to buy that that was enough, that Nikki was grabbing her ankles, that was enough to cause her to just be so easily pinned. What do you think?
As far as that goes, I actually, and I don't know if I missed it, but I had no idea that both matches were tonight. I thought tonight was just the Fatal 4-Way, and the finals were going to be, and, you know, they do the other one next week on SmackDown. And maybe they explicitly stated that they were both tonight, and I missed it. But until 10 minutes before they went in the ring and they brought it up, I had no idea. So I wrote, I can't believe that was only 5 minutes, and then, you know, it makes sense. If they were only going to go 5 minutes, though, I kind of wish they would have done something like a tag team battle royal or something where both of you have to get eliminated or something silly like that and taking up the 5 minutes that way. The problem I have with this tournament is the only thing that really had like some intrigue to it was the NXT teams. And the first one got eliminated for whatever reason, they couldn't compete. And then the Toxic Attraction thing, they won and then got injured. And as soon as that happened, to me, it was a foregone conclusion that we're going to get Sky and Kai against Rodriguez and, her hanger on there. And that was going to be the finals. So it's one of those things where that really brought it down in general for me, just because the entire intrigue of this has been completely blown up, which, again, I understand isn't really their fault. There was some other things that happened that they weren't completely in control of, which makes sense. It is what it is. So I give them a little bit of a pass on the four-way, but like I said, I would have preferred like a battle royal or something different if that was what they were going to do.
All right. Sean, any closing words for us?
Yeah, I just want to say a quick question about Raquel. Like, where do you think they're going with her? Do you guys have like good hopes for her, high hopes for her? I'm kind of like in the middle on her. Like, I'm waiting to see. Like, I think she has talent. I'm waiting to see how it develops. I think they've done some good things with her, and I think this will help her. But where do you think kind of her ceiling might be? And guys, it's always good to talk to you, man. I miss being on here. Wade, I've all the coverage this week's been great. Again, with all the, especially the AEW stuff, it's been fun listening to that. I'm going to get into the fix here hopefully tomorrow and listen to all that. And just thankful for all you do, man. Alex, always good to talk to you, man. Thank you guys for taking my call, as always.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it. I mean, I think the tag team tournament has sort of thrown off any kind of sense that we should read too much into how any of these women in the tournament are being pushed, because everything's been about either the women who are in the world title picture right now or everybody else being thrown in the tag tournament. So I don't really get a sense of how Paul Levesque feels about Raquel. And I'm kind of with Sean. Like, I need a bigger sample size. I think the way Vince McMahon was pushing her felt kind of forced and unnatural and one-dimensional. And so we'll see. I mean, as we can see, you know, Levesque's putting his focus on the things that are kind of A-level in terms of mattering, pushing Drew, pushing the TV main event, the lineup for next week is the most we've ever seen a week ahead of time for a WWE show this century, probably. And so I don't know, you know, when he gets around to Raquel, you know, I don't think Raquel's one of his like NXT favorites, like Johnny Gargano or I don't want to say guilty pleasure, but, you know, a Dexter Lumis type, or it's like somebody he's known for a real long time. But I think he's going to know how to feature her, and he's going to know what her strengths and weaknesses are better than Vince McMahon, just like he is with Karrion Kross. Alex, what do you think?
I actually disagree. I think that this tournament has shown us that he does believe in Raquel. I can't believe they don't bring this up on TV. And it was funny that it was the story of the match tonight, because in a kayfabe sense, they should be mentioning that Aaliyah is completely dead weight and Raquel Rodriguez is the entire team by herself. Like, why they're not harping on that is beyond me. And I'm starting to think that there's a small possibility that a similar thing's going to happen on Monday and they're going to lose and Rodriguez is going to flip out and beat up Aaliyah. I just have a small feeling that might happen. With that said, though, I think there's big plans for Rodriguez, because, like I said, she's single-handedly winning these matches for the most part. You know, Aaliyah's there, but Aaliyah's doing about as much in these tag matches as I am. So it is what it is. With that said, she's not ready. She is not ready at all. And it's one of those situations with her where I really, really hope that the emphasis on the women's division continues and there's more than one story on each brand that doesn't revolve around the titles, because she's going to need that to continue to grow, because she is not anywhere near ready right now to be in a program with Becky or Bianca or Bayley or Charlotte or Rousey. It's not time yet.
I think I'm intrigued by your prediction of how this all ends and the way that Raquel has been the dominant factor so far would back up that being the storyline. Plus, you know, Aaliyah is pretty expendable to make a point for Rodriguez. So if that's been happening sort of in the background, kind of like we saw Doudrop and Nikki A.S.H. arguing in the background, you know, literally of the promo segment with Sonya and Natalya this week. If that's an undercurrent of a story that Hunter's been building up and pulls and then, you know, decides to go with it. Good for him. You know, we're still learning what his approach is going to be and how much we'll get rewarded for paying attention to granular details along the way. All right. I'll give the numbers out again. 347-215-8558. 347-215-8558. We'd love to hear from longtime listeners who are first-time callers, so don't be shy. Up next is Brad from New York. Brad, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about SmackDown?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Alex. Quick logistical question before I get to my thing about SmackDown, if that's okay. I emailed a couple times, didn't hear back, not a big deal. I know everyone's busy, but is there a difference between me being VIP on Patreon versus the actual site with a login? Because, you know, I did it on Patreon, and I'm new to this, and I really don't know, you know, like I don't get like notifications for like the NXT show, for example. You know, I was just wondering if there's any, you know, major difference between the two. I don't need you to go into, like, painstaking detail, but I was just curious because I really don't know, you know, if there's something I'm missing here.
Sure, yeah. So the Patreon option is for people who are like the Patreon ecosystem. We offer our current VIP shows through that. So every VIP show that goes up, along with all the ad-free versions of the free shows, are all on the Patreon feed. And for people who like Patreon and only are interested in the current content, that's perfect, and a lot of people like that. If you're interested in our library, our back issues, and an ad-free version of our website, and access to, as I said, the back issues and the back library of podcasts, then the way to go is through the main website. You know, the signing up at pwtorch.com/govip with credit card, debit card, or PayPal. Are you asking also about how to call into the show or listen live? Is that also one of your questions?
No, it's just like for instance, like the NXT show after it goes live, like I don't get, you know, there's no sort of, you know, notification like this show is on or even this show. I understand you just go to Blog Talk Radio, it's on, you know, after the show, but,
yeah.
You know, I guess, you know, the NXT one's on a different feed than this. I don't know. So I was just
right.
Kind of a little curious about that. I really don't want to take up everyone's time talking about that, but, you
no,
know,
that's okay.
Just was curious.
Yeah. I always battle how much logistics to get into and how much people just zone out or hit fast forward or kind of just figure it out on their own. But if you go to pwtorch.com, there'll be a link in the NXT TV report to the live stream of the NXT post show. And it is on a different page than this in the Blog Talk live streaming system because it isn't a Wade Keller show. It's a daily cast.
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you, guys. So on SmackDown, you know, first of all, what a brutal beating of Drew. I mean, you saw he had those big scratches on his back. I mean, that
shoulder,
looked really
yeah.
vicious. I mean, that really was tough. And, you know, in a certain way, you know, just your last caller kind of alluded to, you know, what are they going to do type of thing. You know, I feel really weird about this match because in a certain way I have a very big affinity for Drew, as I'm sure a lot of people do, and I want to see him get his you know, titles or title, and I don't want to see him lose in front of his home country. But in the same respect, I don't want Roman's reign, you know, no pun intended, I don't want that to end. And it's the only thing that I'm thinking that would make this palatable to me is if somehow this match becomes maybe in the middle of the match for one championship. I mean, do you see any way, Alex or Wade, that, you know, Theory comes in with some sort of cash in, the stipulation changes, it's now just for one title? I've called about this before, but this is really top of mind to me. Like, tonight when I'm watching Roman and Drew do this, and Drew's under the chair, I'm thinking to myself, man, I wish there was just one title that Drew could have. You know, I really do, and it's really a conundrum for me because, I mean, do you see any way that this match turns into a one-title thing, or is everything going forward always for both? And if so, why even have both?
Yeah, I was thinking about that watching the visual of the Usos putting both belts on Reigns' shoulders, that they haven't gone so far as to just, you know, meld them together into one, you know, red and blue belt, or just going back to a black belt, black leather strap, and say it's, you know, the unified title or whatever. There's, and you know, there's various reports, and who knows what to make of them about, you know, the mood Vince was in, or I haven't really seen anything credible about Levesque's thoughts on what to do, you know, if he has a long-term plan or even a short-term plan for the belts to either unify them more or separate them or just kind of keep his options open. But I was watching this just thinking, man, if there was a way to give Drew one of them and get them on those parallel tracks again as the champion of each respective brand, like was the case going into the Survivor Series a couple years ago, that would be a good scenario. You know, if you're an advocate for two separate world titles, this seems like a good time to split them off, but there's just no hint of that at all being in the cards or a backstory that would lead to a plausible situation where one would be at stake but not the other. So I don't think they're going that way. And in fact, just the fact that the way that Levesque pushed the IC and US title matches and the belts and the history and the lineage of them so much, it to me, that's an indication he's trying to build up those secondary titles, with the idea being those will be more important, brand specific, and then you'll have the unified Universal WWE belts as kind of that singular traveling champion representing both brands with that ultimate title belt. So I get what Brad, what you're saying. I think I just don't see any hint that that's happening. How about you, Alex?
I'm in favor of splitting them back up, but honestly, I do not think it'll be at Clash of the Castle. If it does happen, I don't think that'll be it. I think our best shot for it anytime soon is some situation where we have a draft and end up with general managers or something, and that turns into, Roman, you get to keep this one, but the other one's going to be a tournament on the other show. And even that, at this point, there's no hint of that either. That's just my more likely scenario kind of thing at this point. I think Wade's right. I think that they're spending all this time with the Intercontinental and United States titles, and look at who those belts are on right now. They're both on guys who, in a different situation, when there is two world titles, would be competing for those two world titles on their respective brands. So it really seems like that's the direction now. The only problem with the traveling champion theory is Reigns doesn't travel. So the challenger is going to be the one that has to travel to him, which I don't super like, because one of the things that I was hoping Triple H would do is really hammer down this brand split thing. And there's just way too much crossover for me. Like, Aaliyah was on Raw for some reason.
Yep.
And it's just like, and we talked about this on our show last night with myself and Patrick, but, you know, I just wish that they would lean into this whole thing and really rely on it and do like a trade deadline and keep people away from each other. Like, not to go off a tangent about the brand split, but remember when they first did it and then we got these WrestleMania matches that were like Undertaker against Orton and they hadn't been on the same brand for like 3 years, or Angle and Shawn Michaels? Like, we have no chance of that anymore because everybody intermingles all the time.
Yeah. I have almost given up on – I mean, I've largely given up on trying to keep track of who's on what brand. I have a good idea with, you know, probably, you know, the most important people. But the fact that you have a women's tag tournament going on and people are floating around and there's exceptions to rules based on if you hold a title or if you are friends with somebody who's on the other brand, it's just it would be nice. If we get some clarity on that. And I mean, we've even had conflicting reporting on when or if there's going to be a draft to shake things up. Is it going to be this fall? Is it going to be after early next year for some reason? So, you know, and again, I mean, part of it is at this point, like, I'm just giving Paul Levesque some space to figure this out. You know, I mean, not every decision he makes is going to be final. Not every decision needs to be made right away. But at some point, one of the things hopefully we get some clarity and consistency on is what's the situation with the belts and what's the situation with the roster split and where is Paul Levesque on that? You know, I mean, because he might just blow the whole thing up and talk to USA and Fox and say, we're going to have all the stars on both shows and we just think it's a better way to go about it. No exclusives. I don't think he'll do that, but I mean, I'm not, you know, we don't know what's been going on in his head and what his true desires are. But right now, due to some circumstances, they've made lots of exceptions to the point where it feels real watered down. Anyway, Brad, I'll throw back to you for any follow-up on what Alex has to say and what I say.
Yeah, well, one final thing just in terms of, like, the inside of the business that I'm not privy to, but I would imagine you guys know a tremendous amount more than I ever would. You know, when Drew's looking into the camera during that segment, which, by the way, I thought was great, the Drew going home segments and, you know, talking about how he was fired, these are, you know, really, I thought those spots were great, those segments. But Drew's looking into the camera so seriously, and he says, I'm going to take that title off for you, or whatever he said. You know, I'm going to walk away from Cardiff as the undisputed this and that. And he's looking in the camera, I'm going to take your head off, and I'm going to win that championship, 1, 2, 3. Now, does Drew or Roman, does Drew and Roman, did these guys, in your opinion, did they know the outcome of this match? Or is that just great character acting? Because I feel like they look so confident, like, at the camera when they say, like, I'm going to win or I'm going to win. Like, do they know the – or is that a decision that might be made the day of? Like, or is that something that neither of them know purposely, so their acting in the lead-up is better? Or I'm just curious about how that works, if you could provide me with a little bit of insight on that. And, you know, I'll let you guys get to other callers and whatever, but I'm really curious about that because I feel like it's easy when you know you're not going to win to maybe come across as a little less convincing, even a touch less. In the way you're kind of dishing out your words and dishing out these promos. So I'm just curious about that. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. So generally, somebody at Reigns' level is going to know if he asks or they're going to run the idea by him of what they have in mind and respect give him the respect of asking for his input on what he thinks. Also, Paul Heyman is – I'm thinking of like derisive ways to put this, you know, like a busybody or, you know, like in people's business, but like, I don't mean it in a negative way, but he's really invested. Like he wants to protect his people, the people he's working with. And he's been a booker and he's very into it. Some people show up and go, what do you got for me? And you know, Paul's reputation is, you know, he wants to know 3 months out what you're planning. And I'm sure he feels that's more palatable now with Paul Levesque, especially because Paul Heyman, Paul Levesque and Stephanie McMahon get along. So my hunch is Reigns knows what the plan is. Drew, I'm less sure. I think it's kind of a borderline case. Most wrestlers are not told to finish their match ahead of time these days. WWE doesn't want leaks. They don't. If they change their mind, they don't want to have a big brouhaha and you know people thinking they were lied to, or you know broken promises. My hunch is Drew's got a pretty good idea because they've talked to him about what he's going to do next and why he's doing it. But I would not rule out that nothing explicitly has been told to him. Either way, even if Drew knows he's losing, I think he's absolutely capable of convincing you that he thinks he's going to win and is doing a good job not hedging or showing ahead of time that he doesn't want to act like he cares if he wins or loses. Because sometimes baby faces do that. They'll, like, give off the vibe, well, you know, win or lose, blah, blah, blah. And they start pre-rationalizing a loss. And that's not happening with Drew. But I respect that, and I like that, and I think that's the way to go. That's how MMA fighters in a top fight go. You know, they put you in a position where you can't imagine how they're going to react when one of them loses and one of them has to lose. Alex, anything you want to add to that?
I mean, you're the expert here. You know better than I do, but I would assume that both of them are well aware a week out here of the end. And I think they're both trusted enough that there won't be a leak. That's just my take on it.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. All right, Brett, thanks for the call. Let's jump to we'll go to Ryan in Cumberland next. Ryan, good to hear from you. What do you got for us for regarding SmackDown?
I have a question on the women's tournament in the Last Chance match. Do you think the announcers could have explained better why Alexa Bliss and Asuka didn't get a shot since they actually won a match? And I know, like, you know, the real reason might be that they don't want them to lose, you know, a second time to Bayley and the good Kai, if that's the plan to put the belts on them. But, you know, it doesn't make any sense if you're not thinking that way.
Alex, I mean, it's a women's tag tournament. I'm not holding them to the standards that I would say for a more high profile, you know, singles tournament. But what have you thought about how they've handled this?
I think they've done a good job with the prestige as far as the question goes. I think it's pretty simple. It was all the teams that lost in the first round. Alexa and Asuka already won. They advanced and then couldn't get the job done, so they're not in the second chance because they already had two matches. Anyway.
I don't know if that's fair to give everyone who went 0-1 a chance, but someone who went 1-1 not a chance. I guess that's kind of Ryan's point. You're right. I mean, that is the pattern, but I don't know if that seems particularly fair.
I didn't say it's good logic. I'm just
I thought you touted it. You were touting it. That's a callback for those joining us midstream.
No, again, pointing out what their logic is doesn't make the logic good. That's just what they were going for.
So you're in the a retweet is not an endorsement camp. Well, you're not even on Twitter, are you?
No. So I'm the wrong one to ask.
Yeah, yeah.
But as far as it, as the tournament goes, I think they've done a great job making it important. I mean, I mentioned that after the first two matches, they, like, doubled the entire amount of time that was spent on the Queen's Crown thing. So that was a great step in the right direction. The four-way tonight was a slight step backwards, but I feel like they got some of it back with the match later on. It's one of those things, and I mentioned this earlier too, is I have a feeling that under Levesque, we're going to see more of an emphasis on the women's division to the point where instead of just having a title feud on each brand and then that's kind of it, I think you're going to see maybe two women's feuds on SmackDown and then, you know, three on Raw. Like, I think there's a really good chance that there's 5 to 6 feuds going on a way that doesn't feel super contrived. You know, it may end up feeling that way anyway, but this could be a way to do that. On top of all that, though, you have to like the fact that these titles felt like they didn't mean anything, and they felt more important sitting on that little table and being talked about and having women have, you know, 10-minute matches for the last 3 weeks than they ever felt around the waist of people not named Bayley and Sasha.
All right, Ryan, back to you.
I have a question on the commentary on Pat McAfee and Baron Corbin, how he, like, buries them each week. Is this possibly to lead to a rematch, even, like, maybe a gimmick match, maybe, like, a boxing match that might give Baron, like, a pretty good advantage since he's they keep mentioning he's a 3-time Golden Gloves champion, so people might actually buy that Baron could beat him pretty easily.
Alex, what do you think?
That match tonight with Ricochet was way more about Corbin than it was about Ricochet, and the commentary told you that without telling you that, because yes, Ricochet won, but all the commentary talked about was Corbin's character and how much of a losing streak he's been on. I think the McAfee thing is more leading to a potential character change for Corbin and the happy thing going away, as opposed to another match between the two. You could be right, but I personally think that's where they're going.
Michael Cole really touted, oh man, that's the word of the night, Ricochet at the beginning of the match during his ring introduction and praised him. And I thought they did a good job making it seem like Ricochet's win meant something. And I think that the Corbin promo, the soundbite where he goes Ricochet, because I like when promos reflect the truth of what viewers have watched. And I think it's one of the criticisms earlier about, hey, Drew and Reigns have a history. Why aren't they talking about it? Or Karrion Kross making his in-ring debut. What do you mean by that? He's wrestled before in WWE on TV. Corbin said with Ricochet, it's always one step forward, two steps back. And I think that's how Ricochet fans feel. So you have Corbin talking not about a losing streak in his promo, in his soundbite, but about Ricochet, one step forward, two steps back. And Cole was talking really positively about him and using a bunch of superlatives. I think they did a better job than you're conveying, Alex, or what you took from it, in making it seem like it was also about Ricochet. Clearly, the way they hung on Corbin leaning in the corner after the loss and the telestrator on his face and the losing streak aspect meant, you know, they're pointing towards a change for Corbin. But I think they deserve some credit for not having it just seem like, well, Ricochet happened to be the body in the ring who beat him. But maybe if you're a Ricochet fan under Paul Levesque, you should feel like, you know, maybe he will have a storyline of some actual momentum.
I'll believe that when I see it. I agree. When he first came out, there were all those superlatives, but they do that every time. Whenever he makes his entrance, it's, oh, you got to see this guy. He's so exciting. He's this, he's that. And then he gets in the ring and he has this match and he does all of his little spots. And during the match, while the match was going on, they weren't marveling at his spots. They were talking about Corbin. And that's the pattern with Ricochet. I agree about the Corbin promo, dead on. But as soon as that bell rung, until the end, when he won and they briefly mentioned that he won, they really spent the whole time talking about Corbin.
Yeah.
And when he did win, it's not like they turned it into, oh, we're going to focus the camera on Ricochet. Everybody get ready. You know, he just knocked off Corbin. This should put him in line for whoever comes out at Clash at the Castle with the Intercontinental title. They didn't do that. They ignored him, and they focused on Corbin.
Yep. All right. Ryan, back to you. Good pushback.
I have a question on Karrion Kross. Do you think his opponent will be next week will be someone like they've been using as enhancement talent, like Mr. Excellent Brandon Scott, or would actually be like a fairly decent name, do you think, say like a Ridge Holland or someone that would actually say, wow, he beat that guy?
Alex?
Jobber. 1,000% it's going to be a jobber. I am kind of hoping it's going to be Bo Keller because I can't believe nobody brought that up to you.
All right. Ryan, thanks for the call. Hey, do you have a fourth thing? You're going to surprise us here?
Yeah, I'll go with the fourth one. My question's on the Clash at the Castle. Do you know any American fans that are actually that travel overseas because they were, you know, putting that out there? All tickets are still available. You know, so they acted like maybe someone wants to go overseas on a vacation over there to check this event out. And if anyone from your staff is getting over or any buddies of yours?
No, but I sure hope that we hear from people who are in the building. It'd be great to get, on-site report. I know Greg Parks with Wrestling Night in America is doing, I think he's doing a live post show. I know it's an afternoon show, so I should confirm that with him that it fits his schedule. But it'd be great to hear from somebody who was in the building or is going to be in the building. But no, nobody on staff is flying out there, although it's tempting. It'd be fun, but it's tough when you have both that and AEW with the same weekend. Plus, I don't think I have a valid passport, so I can't do it on such short notice.
All right.
I think my passport expired like 25 years ago. Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it. All right. Our number 347-215-8558. Javier's coming up in just a bit, but we're going to go to Kyle in Baltimore next. Kyle, thank you for calling. What's in your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Crab is foul. Hey, how you doing?
Good.
So
what were you just talking about? Was that us or?
My fan just fell, so that's why I turned off my fan, but it just fell when I turned off. But I went to college. So that's why I was. So I thought tonight's SmackDown just was bad. I was bored. I was watching, just like, oh my God, what is it's? It's Roman Reigns and nothing else. I've been saying this about SmackDown for the longest time. It seems like it's Raw is so much important, and it's so weird. There's no champion, but yet I feel more invested in Raw than I am SmackDown, even though for Raw, in some parts, I don't like neither, but at least I get more. I don't know if it's because there's more star power. Like, that's the debate, and that's just the main thing. A lot of star power on Raw, and it's only one star on SmackDown that they care about. And just for watches, I was like, okay. And you were right earlier, but said if McIntyre does not win the championship, I don't know what they plan on doing. Wouldn't have Roman Reigns as champion forever? It's to that point. I hope that's not the case, because if he's not around, he doesn't want to show up. He doesn't want to do anything like that. I'm going to talk about this first. I was going to talk about the women first, but I just had that thought. I was like, I don't know what they're playing, what they're trying to tell me. What I'm watching this is like, I don't know where I'm going with this. I'm just going on and on here with that. Just, I don't know. But I'll stick to my main point with the women real fast is with this tournament is so all over the place, to the point where I'm thinking to myself that Io and Dakota are going to win, and then what? That would be my thing there. It's like, well, then what? When they win, then what? For next week on Raw. Because it's like, it's like there's like no direction for these titles still, I don't think, because even though let's say they win, but it's like a then what? Are they going to build off of this after? And yeah, just like you said, unfortunate situations that has happened throughout this tournament. They're going to capitalize on it whenever they win the titles. Are they going to have a plan for this, or are you just going to just ignore it?
Yeah,
just stick with Bayley and Bianca. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's okay. Alex. What do you think is the ultimate goal that will be achieved through this tournament, other than just finally getting belts on a team? And you know, then obviously, you know, there could be an angle with Sasha and Naomi coming back.
Yeah, I mean, there's the lingering possibility of Sasha and Naomi. Remember, the six-woman tag is occurring also, so there's a slight possibility that Asuka and Alexa will remain a team. There's also been the tease in recent weeks of Ronda and Shayna Baszler, and they've actually teamed up on house shows, so that's something that could be in the future. Perhaps Raquel Rodriguez with a real partner is a possibility. There's a lot of different ways they could go. They just might have to mix and match some people and find out what works. And keep in mind that, you know, they did make an effort here to bring up some people from NXT. It kind of blew up in their face a little bit, but that could have been part of the future direction as well, as far as building out that division, because it's not like when the first NXT team went down, they didn't replace them with other women on the main roster. They replaced them with another NXT team.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like that was somewhat in the plans to at least bring up, you know, another team to get involved in that title picture.
And I think it was the Cole or McAfee. Well, maybe it was Graves. Now I don't remember what show it was on, who said that the women's tag champs represent all three shows, not just Raw and SmackDown. And that's, you know, why an NXT team with no Raw or SmackDown wins was included.
Yep. And I don't remember who said that either, but I did hear that. So that, and again, that plays right into it as far as giving them options. I have some pushback for you, Kyle, though, because as much as I like Reigns, I do think they care about other people on this show. Like, I don't know how you watch that show tonight and you can tell me that they don't care about Gunter. Like, I don't know how you could see that show and not feel that way.
Kyle, what say you?
Well, they do care about Gunther. I think the only that's maybe the other top. They do care about Gunther. They seem to try to care about Karrion Kross. So maybe that's me in the main three. Maybe I'm just so used to Reigns all the time. I don't see anyone else. I'm so used to seeing Reigns only. It's like he's the only one that I feel like they care about. But I do, you know, they now do something with Gunther. I see they're doing something with Karrion Kross. But I'm personally not fans of any three of them. So maybe that's why I'm kind of being a little bit biased, not really caring too much about any all three of them at all. So maybe that's how I feel about it. But I know they're pushing those two, which is fine. I just personally just don't care. But I think that's why I didn't bring it up, because I don't really care too much about them. But they're doing something with them, so that's good, I guess. But that's my thought with that. But my main point of bringing that up was because I was just watching tonight and watching the last few weeks. It feels like next week's going to be the most important episode ever. It feels like they have Hit Row going to be wrestling finally on SmackDown, which I think I'll bring them up here. I like Hit Row, but mainly because only B-Fab, she has the star presence from her that just pops out on television every single time I see her. She's the only person I see that really interests me, a part of this group. And so with having the other two facing American Desktop Models, because that's what it sounds like to me. That's why I watch them. They're like, this is not America's Next Top Model. And that's why every time I see them, that's what I think of, this is not a modeling show. This is a wrestling show. Can you wrestle? That's my main complaint with this whole thing. So what do you think about that for next week?
You've given us a prompt to talk about Hit Row and everything going on with them and the Maximum Male Models. Alex, anything you want to say about Maximum Male Models, Hit Row, and what they did tonight with I'm not up on spray paint, but spray paint usually doesn't look like a marker drawn on something. It felt like they used some water soluble, kid friendly Crayola marker, blue marker on the wall of that bus because they didn't want to deal with getting spray paint off, but because they never showed the spray paint, they just pretended. So I thought that was about as dumb looking as when the cops show up in starchy outfits and shiny badges that have clearly never been worn before until 10 minutes before they dress somebody up in them for Halloween backstage. So I thought that was pretty cheesy. But again, maybe there's some spray paint that does look like marker. But that was my little, not super important, but not unnoteworthy observation.
No, that looked like the dry erase board I have on my fridge to write my grocery list on. So
there you go. Yes. Yep.
Yeah. That's what that was. That was straight out of the boardroom dry erase.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm into this for a weird reason, because the Maximum Male Models and Hit Row are so opposite ends of the spectrum. I was really into their music just for some reason playing in the background and it flustering Max Dupree, even when it shouldn't have any impact on what they're trying to accomplish at all. And just him trying to move on with their photo shoot, which again seems for next to no purpose. So I got a kick out of that. And I've said this before, but I want to see Maximum Male Models wrestle because I want to watch them wrestle in the gimmick. I want to see if they actually play up the gimmick.
I agree. I'm eager to see them wrestle. And I mean, Mansoor's not bad. He's had some good moments, and Mace has been in the system for a long time. And I assume for a purpose, that they keep him around besides just, you know, his resume or some just endless hope that he gets better with no sign of it. So let's see. And it's not like Max Dupree can't wrestle either. So I'm curious if they make a big deal out of it when they have, you know, their big ring entrance in a match.
Oh, I didn't even think of the ring entrance. I'm curious what that's going to look like too. We're going to find out what they are. I kind of have a bad feeling, especially after, was it last week or the week before that Hit Row showed up, dumped him out of the ring and then wrapped. But I kind of have a bad feeling that Maximum Male Models is going to get squashed, and that's going to be kind of the end of that. But it is what it is. I also like the inclusion of Garza and Carrillo. That makes a lot of sense, and it works.
And I like the idea that Maxine seems a little infatuated with them, and
yes.
Max is trying to keep her focused on Mason Mansoor. And so there's something going on there that could be, you know, where Maxine might split off. Because remember, Vince McMahon was down on Max and dumped him from the act and was going to put Maxine in there. And then, you know, Paul Levesque likes Max and thought it was a bit of an overreaction on Vince's part. And the timing worked out and Max was back after only missing 1 week. But Maxine is there. So what are you going to do? Well, maybe Maxine can be with Umberto and Angel. And I mean, I could see that all working out.
Not only that, but last week they caught Maxine dancing
to hit
Hit Row, and
yep.
then Max had to pull her away. So that's
a nice
possibility
touch.
Too.
Totally. Yep, that's right. That's right. Kyle, anything else you want before we move on here?
Yeah, as we'll bring up Sami Zayn and like Kevin Owens, this whole people are assuming that's going to lead to a tag team title match, and if that's true, then it hasn't been evidence of that being happening, because all I've seen is Sami is just being, well, as of now, he just gotten be a part of the bloodline now, which is weird, but whatever. I was watching this, I was just thinking to myself, this guy's going to get played anyway. So it's like, I personally could not get super invested in this, because I know where this is going. But if only this tag team title match that people are assuming that have seen Owens and Sami, I guess the Usos, how do you think that's going to play out? And how will Kevin Owens get involved? I guess, you know, it doesn't matter. He can just show up on SmackDown if he wants to, but how do you think that's going to play out? If that's the direction they're going in.
Thanks, Kyle. Appreciate the call.
Yep.
Alex, what do you think of the prospects of KO and Sami, the, you know, Montreal connection? Does it seem more circumstantial and guesswork and people are connecting dots they shouldn't, or does it make just too much sense not to do it? And do you like it?
This is the first time I've heard that. So I'm going to try to process it the best I can in real time here. I don't know if it's the best idea, and I think people are connecting dots based on their friendship. I don't know if that's necessarily the direction they're going. Sami is on like this weird island unto himself at this point, and Jimmy really likes him or enjoys bullying him. I'm not really sure. And Jay is very resentful of him or is jealous or just doesn't want him anywhere near his family. Again, not really sure. Could go a lot of directions. But Sami is just, speaking of people they care about, he is a glowing highlight of this show every week. And I can't believe they didn't do this stuff with him and Reigns sooner. Like, I never realized that I would care so much about all this time that he was clamoring to talk to Reigns and be around Reigns. And I never realized that payoff would be as good as it was last week. But Sami Zayn is like the geeky kid in high school and the star quarterback who's sitting at the lunch table with all the cheerleaders and the other football players, goes, "Hey man, come over and sit next to me." And this kid just marvels at everything he says and is like, "Oh my God, this guy agrees with me. This is great. This is the greatest thing ever." And he's just playing it perfectly. And it's hitting on all cylinders. So I kind of am starting to get into your boat, where we talked about this a while ago, but about maybe the slow burn of Sami starting to realize that he's being used and turning babyface. I don't know if Kevin Owens plays into this necessarily at all. I think Owens is going to kind of end up on his own path. And personally, I think Owens is going to end up being a heel.
Interesting. The thing with Sami and Reigns, they are just gold together. The chemistry that they have, Reigns is great playing off of the Usos. He's great playing off of Heyman. He was great playing off of Drew. I think he and Sami enjoy playing off of each other. I think Sami's his favorite person or his most effective person sharing the screen with. It just pulls out of Reigns that mind F aspect of Reigns' character, but also, like, Reigns enjoys having that kind of power over another grown man, but I also think he has a genuine fondness for how much Sammy likes him and looks up to him. I think there's a – it feels thought through and something that probably – well, I'm sure it occurs with powerful, successful people and hangers-on who are just a little too eager to be at a club with them or on the road with them or at a restaurant and seen with them. It just – it feels like a real slice of being famous, how Reigns plays off of Sammy and how Sammy is just that overly eager, you know, sort of fanboy but trying to keep his dignity, but he just can't quite rein it in because he so badly wants Reigns' approval. It's just it's great television.
And what do you think of the Jay dynamic? Because I mentioned that a few weeks ago in my report that, like, before they started overtly doing it, it was a little more subtle where Jimmy was always kind of buddying up. And, like, does Jimmy actually like Sammy? And what's Jay's deal? Like, what's your take on that?
I think Jimmy is – for a while I thought Jimmy got a kick out of Sammy. I think Jimmy – enjoys making Sammy think that he likes him, but he doesn't. And Jay is actually more of a stand-up guy because he's not leading Sammy on. That's this week's impression. When it was more subtle, I thought Jay had a soft spot for Sammy and Jimmy is just being a jerk. But now I think – I shouldn't say Jimmy was being a jerk. I thought Jay was being a jerk and Jimmy got a kick out of him. And now I'm thinking – Jay's just more upfront about how he feels, and Jimmy's just kind of conning Sammy. But I'm not sure, because even though it's been going on for weeks, it's a small enough sample size, and maybe they're changing their mind as they go, and maybe we're reading too much into it. So I don't have real certitude on it, but I watch closely, and I'm intrigued, and I really like it, because this brings us back to the Thunderdome era of the Bloodline and what the Usos are capable of doing, especially what Jay accomplished when he was a featured talent. And you know, Jimmy's not as good, but he's good. And so just those four are fascinating. And just having Paul Heyman gone for so long selling the table spot with Lesnar, they don't really mention him much. I assume he's, you know, coming back and not written out or anything. Did they mention Heyman tonight that you remember, Alex?
No, they didn't.
Yeah. It's just weird. You know, like, if he's just selling the Lesnar move, why not just bring him up in passing? Like, matter-of-factly, oh, you know, we'll probably see Heyman back. But they just don't talk about him. But anyway, so yeah, I'm not committed to what the dynamic is, but the latest thought is that Jimmy is not actually fond of Sammy.
Do you think that there's on Jimmy? I think he enjoys bullying Sammy and enjoys that he thinks he's part of this group. I think that's what it is. Do you think it's possible that Jay actually has a conscience and he's telling Zane, hey, stop believing this. It's a weird way to put it because he is coming off like a jerk, but it's not intentional. It's more like, snap out of it, dude. Realize what they're doing here and get away from this, because he's the one who's stuck because there's nothing he can do.
I do. Yeah. I think, I mean, that's my leaning right now. I'm not certain that that's what's going on, but to me, it's more chess than checkers, and I think with the Bloodline, they do play chess more than checkers in terms of extrapolating clues from, you know, extrapolating conclusions from subtle clues. Easy for me to say. I think we're rewarded. There's a better chance of us being rewarded for thinking in a little bit more layered way than what just seems like it, the face of it is in this, and I think that applies here.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Stay tuned. We'll see. All right. Well, if you want to give us a call, you still can. If you're joining the show midstream or just want to react to anything we said so far, feel free to chime in. 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. That'll flag you on the switchboard. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. I thought we were going to go shorter tonight, especially not having an on-site correspondent. But here we are, hour and a half in, and we're still going to go to Evan, and we got Javier waiting in the wings for the roundtable segment. But first things first, Evan in Chicago, thanks for calling. What is your first thought on SmackDown tonight?
Hey, Wade. First thing, SmackDown tonight, I'm thinking, man, Sammy is hot. honestly, I've been thinking he's been hot for the last couple of weeks. And to me, Kevin, what's going on with him, whatever's not hurting him is honestly going to hinder him if he's just standing under the spotlight and not showing he wants it rather than he's just standing there for the time being. I thought his match with Drew McIntyre was amazing. I thought it was stunning from an insider perspective. But honestly, little things like Sammy getting one up on Riddick, Sammy getting one up on Drew, it's playing a task to his role with what he's been doing with Jay and Jimmy and the Bloodline. And I can see it culminating, without any major hindrance on his character or what he's been able to do with them or accomplish with them. And I can see it definitely going that way for him.
Alex.
As far as Sammy goes, I mean, he's a star, man. And you're right. The thing is with Drew is that match tonight, I'm going to go out on a limb and tell you that's the same match they've been having around the house show loop, because those guys are working SmackDown main events around the loop. So I would imagine that's why that came off as well as it did. I would imagine they've had that match 5 or 6 times, if not more.
Yeah, and
go ahead, Evan.
Yeah, to be honest with you, the way Drew has been playing this whole entire build-up, you would think that how he sees his match versus Roman Reigns, it's going to be one that's going to test him more than it is going to be the Bloodline. And you know how Roman Reigns moves. You know how he gets into his opponent's head without doing the most that we know he could do, even without Paul Heyman being there tonight. We don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, that's kind of where the respect comes in. And speaking of respect, you know, with Paul in charge now and, you know, NXT being on the rebrand that it is, we're kind of losing that touch that we've got out of that. And I feel like the only way that we've been getting that is Raquel Rodriguez. And you can say whatever you want about her, her character, whatever you want to call it, but Raquel is going to start calling her own shots very soon, and whether you like it or not, or whatever you may think about her, she's going to be a star, and she's already a rising star this year, probably a stand-up if you ask me. And, you know, by this time, the end of next year, she's going to have way more under her belt and off of her chest and more to shake off of her shoulders than she had toward the end of her NXT run as champion.
Alex, any more thoughts on that?
She's got to improve a lot, man. Yeah. She's it's still very much I'm going to come out here and do what I'm told to do and not make waves, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's a lot of people that approach their jobs that way, and it's not the end of the world. But until she breaks off and shows something different and isn't as clunky, I just find it hard to believe that she's going to be anything special. Like, she doesn't pop off the way that, you know, Bianca Belair did when she came to SmackDown and was put in a similar situation. So it's possible with Raquel, but she's going to have to put the work in and make a believer out of people to make that happen, especially with how loaded the women's roster is.
All right, Cole. Evan, back to you for more.
Yeah, honestly, me being the way I am, like, I'd just be sitting here waiting on the Holy Grail to land on me, and, you know, I can be confused about what to expect. And honestly, a lot of stuff that I expected to happen has happened this year rather than it did last year, and it leaves me wondering questions like, when am I going to get a solid match that I'm going to be satisfied with between Jon Moxley and CM Punk?
You're wondering when you're. Well, I think you'll get it at All Out.
All Out. Did I miss something? Are they going to run it back at All Out?
I mean that's the reporting. I can't back it up, and I'm taking a wait and see attitude. But as we talked about on Wednesday on the post show, I don't see anything else that presents itself unless they just have like Hangman at Adam Cole battle, or they have some sort of, you know, Teddy Long steps out and announces some sort of gauntlet match with everybody, or maybe the winner of the Casino Battle Royal. But I think Punk's going to limp out and say, I'm not going to miss this for the world. I want to be in Chicago. I want my rematch. And they do it. But, you know, that's a topic for another show. And that was also Todd's take on the flagship yesterday, or the fix. But anyway, Evan, anything else on SmackDown? Don't get me started on AEW. We'll be here longer.
No. No, it was great. It was great. It was worthy of being titled for. It was worthy of being slated for a go home show, in my opinion. We have much to touch, honestly. Still, I believe I heard someone mention Brock Lesnar, and I can feel that topic creeping on my neck too. Trust me. But other than that, can't wait to see how this is going to unravel next week, leading in the Carter.
Cool. Thanks, Evan. Good to hear from you.
All right, you too. Thanks, Wade. All right, take care.
Yeah, you bet. Yep. Yeah, big weekend next weekend. Alex, when's the last time you watched 10 minutes of AEW or 1 minute of AEW?
The show that I went to.
Yeah, that's what I figured. All right. Let's move to the roundtable with Javier. Javier, good to have you back on the show for a roundtable segment. What say you?
Hey, wait, hey, Alex, how's it going?
Good.
Alex
is not talking to you.
I was definitely yelling at my phone earlier, so Alex and Sean both had me pegged. So.
Yes.
I disagree with the idea that Jay is the good guy in this situation, because there's a moment where Sammy, which was more, I mean Jay was awesome during that scene, in his body language. There's when Roman Reigns tells Sammy that, you know, what you did for me was, you know, was something that family would do, and then Sammy said something that family should do, and he turned back.
Yes.
It looked like Jay was about to jump down his throat. that was great.
Mm.
Although, did you notice that he actually broke character? Did you notice Jay broke character?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, when he starts dancing, when you know, Sammy says, "Oh, I could get into people's head," and all that stuff,
that
and then he starts dancing. Jay starts cracking up, and you can see him covering his mouth, because he's supposed to
oh,
stay
man,
serious
that's awesome.
With Jimmy
yep.
being the one that was like more mirthful, but Jay just lost it at that point. So, but yeah, he ended up breaking character at that. But yeah, I thought that
that's
that
tremendous.
Scene was great. And what I really like is that the way that Roman Reigns plays it, where he could actually sell it as he's being serious. That he's not playing Sammy because he's missing, a Polly. So he's, you know, he needs someone else to confide in, and here he has this person who's not a threat, who's about as threatening as, you know, Paul Heyman is. so you know, in his eyes anyway. So he's actually like legitimately confiding in him. And legitimately telling him these things is not that Roman Reigns is playing him, and that, you know, Jay is jealous over that, while Jimmy's just like, oh, this guy's an idiot. He's not threatened by him, while Jay is. But it could go so many different ways, and the way that they're playing it, you can't really tell whether, you know, Roman is setting him up for a big fall, or if he's actually being legitimately, you know, not I wouldn't say kind to Zayn, but like, not using him to hurt him, but using him like, you know, because he's a narcissist.
Alex, what do you think?
I agree that, again, it goes back to the cool kid with the dorky kid, and that at the end of the day, he enjoys the adulation, even if it's sort of annoying. But I think you're right. I don't know if Reigns is using him maliciously. I'm really interested to see where they go with it next week, as far as, like, is Zayn in the doghouse for losing to Drew, or did he redeem himself with the kick and helping the beatdown as little as he helped? Like, where does that go from here? And, you know, does Zayn have to grovel back to them even though they ended up winning the war tonight?
And the thing is Reigns is such a mind-up that Sammy never knows. Like, am I going to be in the doghouse? We're going to be proud. He's going to be nervous. Reigns will then make him feel like he should be at ease and the all's good. But then Reigns will just twitch or shoot him a certain look or say something with a certain inflection, and Samuel just unravel. Like, what do you mean? And you could just, like, that's what's great about it, is you just, as a viewer, you're like, is Reigns sincere? Is he not? Sammy, don't relax. No, Sammy, relax. Like, you find yourself just totally torn on what the natural reaction should be for Sammy as you watch Reigns just, like you say, Alex, you're just not sure how he really feels about Sammy. I think he has mixed feelings about Sammy. I think he's conflicted about him. And that's why he treats him the way that he does, not entirely one direction or the other. And he sees him as a useful idiot, but also admires that he recognizes his greatness and he knows his place. And we know with Roman, that's a big thing, knowing your place. So it's a real interesting dynamic. And I hope it evolves into something that turns Sammy into as Todd Martin's talking about this week, a big baby face down the line. There's some, rebuilding to do, but he's so talented, and what we saw in Montreal is a window into what he could be. Javier.
Plus, his mission tonight wasn't to beat Drew, but to keep his attention. And it was successful Drew ended up getting completely destroyed. So,
Yeah, because Reigns didn't say the Bloodline doesn't lose main events. He said, I need you to create a distraction. So, yeah, that's a good clarification, honey.
Yeah, that is a good point.
The other small detail I noticed, and I hope this means that these two characters are going to be changed. Did you notice Nikki and Doudrop arguing?
Yes. I did. I referenced that earlier. It's a neat thing in the background again that Levesque is doing.
Yeah, so hopefully this means that at least Nikki goes back to Nikki Cross, I have heard online that Doudrop kind of wants to not be Doudrop anymore. So maybe this means that they get repackaged into a more serious, maybe do like a biker chick gimmick team, something like that, start wearing leathers and being more badass. Particularly with the bring back some of the sanity Nikki Cross. Kind of like what they're doing with Butch, where she's the more aggressive, feral one, kind of relationship between the two of them.
I they're both so talented. And if Paul Levesque's looking to score points with social media, internet, podcast, ardent fans, repackage those two, because they're two of the better workers in the division. Who have certainly they're the more under pushed based on what their potential for good matches is. And, there's some women getting pushed on the Vince McMahon, Kevin Dunn scale that are not going to give you good matches. And Levesque would be really saying something about how he's going to treat the women's division if he gets the most out of them.
Are you referring to Aaliyah?
Kind of. But even, to a degree, Liv. And there's a type that gets to jump ahead in line.
I do hope Nikki's okay though, because if you notice when she took that superplex from the ring post, her leg actually buckled underneath her. The way that she landed, it rolled up underneath her, and she immediately grabbed her knee. And as soon as she got pinned, she started rolling to her side, and you can see the referee getting. Talking to her, and the camera quickly panned away from that. So looked like something might have happened there. So
I wasn't sure. What did your take from that, Alex? What was your read?
That was during some of the storming in this area, so I missed that completely.
Gotcha.
I couldn't have told you. The only reason I know the finish to that is because they showed the replay right afterwards.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that the scene where they were arguing in the background was actually live and not pre-recorded, because if it's live, that means he's okay.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Ish, at least.
Oh yeah. You know what? Yeah, I didn't even think of that. That's a good point. That would have been after the fact.
I get why people think something could have happened, but I don't know. It just seems like they just were trying to she did the offensive move and then. They needed a reason for her to, get pinned.
Yeah. That was my thought of it, but it she really did, like the way she really did, man, was kind of, I mean, you know, I mean, if you're flexible, it probably just hurt for a second and then like, you'll be okay. But you know, it yeah. could have been, you know, hopefully it wasn't, you know, as bad, you know, what it looked like. And the other moment, I absolutely loved, the Sheamus Gunther stare down as like all hell broke loose around them. And they're just, you know, this calm in the middle of the storm going around. That yeah. was just that was a badass scene. So,
I love
and,
it. Yep.
And that actually, yeah. And well, okay. No, I like it. I do want to see Drew and Reigns after that ending too. But, at that moment, that was the match I was most interested in watching, at Clash of the Castle.
Wow. Yeah. It's going to be, there's some good options, especially between those two, when it comes to what are you looking for most forward to, Alex? Especially between those two.
I mean, Reigns, obviously, I'm always going to lean that direction. But, yeah, Gunther, Sheamus is second, and then third. I'm interested in the six-woman tag, but I think Riddle and Rollins edges it a little bit because they've actually built some anticipation for it.
Yeah, I am really intrigued with what Gunther and Sheamus are given time-wise and how that is featured and presented. And it's just such a fresh matchup. You know, Gunther was elevated in the main roster. Sheamus was, you know, at the top of my list of matches that I just thought would be a really good way to get the best out of Sheamus, but help get Gunther over because those two just like going at it. And style-wise, I think they're not exactly the same, where it's sort of like, you know, just mirror image fight. That's not always good, but they're both just kind of badass tough and size-wise similar. So that's the one that I think has a chance to elevate both guys at once. But it's a good lineup. It's going to be a nice Saturday afternoon of WWE. Here in the States.
Speaking of Gunther and Sheamus and kind of that segment, what do you think of Javier and Wade? What do you think of?
Well, I thought you said, what do you think of Javier Wade? And I'm like, wow, I don't know if I want to say
I don't think
Javier,
I want to be
sir.
On.
I don't want you to have to tell me that. But what do you think of the Kaiser and Butch matchup next week? Because I'm like oddly excited for that.
Yeah.
Yes,
I think
you should be.
If they let more Pete Dunne come out, that's going to be fun. I'm really looking forward to that. I do. I mean, I actually like the former Marcel Bartel a lot when he was, I mean, all the Imperium. When I was watching, they were the reason I was tuning into NXT UK, and then, you know, follow them to NXT, and then they did what they did. Changed everybody's name, but you know, whatever. But I'm really high on. I really like Kaiser. I was going to say Kaiser Soze, but that's not. But I do like him. Where. Just as a mouthpiece for him and his, you know, how he just stands there like so rigid. And I really like that group. And yeah, with Butch in this, it's going to be, I kind of wish, cause I don't know if he changed his name online on Twitter to, Pete Butch Dunn. So hopefully they start kind of like working that in a little bit. But you know, I mean, he could still be Butch, but you know, maybe not as cartoonish as it used to be.
I mean, it's you know, we talk about Doudrop getting a new name and Nikki getting a new name or image. That would go quite a ways with some people too. I'm not as down on Butch and the Butch character as you, Javier, sound or most people, but I'm not against them, you know, reining that in a little bit. But I like that he's just high strong and uncontrollable. I think it works for who he is. What do you think, Alex, about what they've done with him?
The name thing doesn't bother me as much as it does a lot of people. Unless it's something completely like ridiculous and degrading, like the Doudrops thing is kind of bordering on that. But like calling Pete Dunne Butch, I don't really care. It is what it is. But the portrayal of that character has been interesting. I actually thought we were going to see Holland and Butch come back completely different because they hadn't been on TV with Sheamus for like the last 2 or 3 weeks and they were back tonight. So I was a little surprised to see that, but I think Javier could be right that there may be a slight change coming for Butch, Pete Dunne, whatever you want to call him. I personally think Ridge Holland he's fallen out of favor quickly. That guy might not have a job in a year.
I agree. I think he's expendable in what they're doing. I was kind of thinking, Sheamus turns babyface. Do you want to waste Sheamus in a feud with Ridge Holland as like sort of the, step one type thing before moving him out? I was thinking, no, you don't. But, I don't know. Well, Javier, what do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, with Holland, I feel bad because when he first debuted in NXT UK, I'm like, man, this guy's really got an awesome look, awesome music, and he looked like a badass. And then NXT, he showed up kind of in the same way, and then immediately got injured. And that was like, oh, and then it's basically just been downhill from there. And then, I mean, and it really is hard to forget about the whole Big E injury, too. I know things happen, but it's still going to be kind of in your mind too. But yeah, I mean, I'm kind of, I kind of agree with Alex on that, unless they repackage him and figure out something to do with him. But I also want to mention, like, the Butch name is not so much my issue. It's just like what it represents, like how sports entertainer is just a word, but it does represent a certain brand of wrestling that has like a negative stereotype. Butch is kind of like just a little bit too over the top, like cartoon, like how the Viking Raiders were, where, you kind of want to see them more into like, he could still be high strung and violent, which, like how he was today, but like when they were doing the whole, where's Butch? That was more the, it was silly. I didn't hate it, but it was still silly.
I get that. Yeah.
Yeah, we're a long way removed from that, though. That was super stupid, and that was a step in the wrong direction. But at least it felt like they realized it and dropped it pretty quickly.
What else, Javier?
Yeah, I'm looking over my notes. I think that's mostly because I mean, you guys talked already about the Ricochet. Corbin thing. I am closer to Alex on that, where it did feel more all about Corbin because it wasn't about Ricochet's comeback. It was about how Corbin's not paying attention to what he's doing, which is what's allowing the comeback. So, but I mean, the fact that it is Ricochet in that spot is a positive for Ricochet. Cause I don't think he would have been under the previous regime, but at least he gets something. I don't think he gets nothing, but at least he gets a little bit of something. But yeah, I do think my question was where the Corbin thing is going to go. Is he going to go back to bum ass Corbin? Because that looked like it was a mm-hmm. good storyline that could have kept going. And are they kind of sort of going back to that so they could, basically put things back on track? Or are they setting up another McAfee? Cause I mean, McAfee's still going hard on him. So,
yeah. Well, what is the upside, Alex, for Corbin, and what is the upside for Ricochet at this point? Looking, just realistically, over the next few months, under Levesque, given what we've seen so far.
Okay, I'm going to start with Corbin.
Yeah.
I really hope he goes back to bum ass because I really liked that, and I liked that he wore the same shirt with the same stain every week. So that something similar to that would be really funny. So I like Corbin. I've said that a lot because I respect the fact that for all the crap that they give him, he always puts off, 1,000% effort into it and makes the best out of his situation. And anybody that does that at work every day has my respect. So I always want things to work out for Corbin. Plus, it's not like he's awful in the ring. Like, there's a reason they have him working with somebody like McAfee. Like, they trust him. So it's a shame they don't use that and make him, slightly more than what he is, because he could be a foundational guy. He needs a change of scenery, man. He's been on SmackDown way too long. He's one of those people that they need a draft to keep him on SmackDown and give him new opponents, or move him to Raw and give him new opponents. Like, he just desperately needs a change of scenery, whether it comes with a change of character or not. As far as Ricochet goes, man, I don't know. It's just not It's just not for me. He can't talk. He's not getting any better. He does really cool moves, but that's not what this is. Like, he would have fit in really well in the first hour of WCW Monday Nitro. And there's nothing wrong with that. I really enjoyed that in the context of what it was. But, like, what is there for him to do? Like, really? He, like I said, he can't talk at all. And with his moveset, you can't turn him heel and give him a manager either. So somebody like him, he's going to have to be in the role that he is now where he can beat Corbin, but he's going to get squashed by Gunter. Like, that's what he is. And I just don't see anywhere you can go for him that's a positive. And it sucks. And I mean, he's a talented guy, but unless he can tap into some form of a character that's more than I'm Ricochet and I'm a video game come to life, it's just never going to happen.
I think the best thing for Ricochet to get the most out of him is to find a tag partner, ideally someone who's different than him style-wise, but they have a chemistry. There's either they have a chemistry in that they're not matching at all, or they have a chemistry in that they just complement each other style-wise and skill set-wise, but they're not necessarily polar opposite personalities. And it doesn't mean that then, you know, they're the tag champs, you know, and at the level of the New Day or the Usos, but that's how you just get something more out of him, because he's the guy, you know, he can take a beating, but he can also stand on the ring apron and end up getting the hot tag and rallying and getting a big pop from the crowd and some near falls. So anyway, Javier, back to you. What do you think?
Yeah, a lot of times you'll just say maybe you turn him heel, but I've seen his heel runs, and I'm not a big fan of King Ricochet either. So yeah, that's the other thing. I agree. Like, if he's gonna stay in the WWE, I mean, when you had asked that question, my first thought is like, trade him to AEW for somebody. I think it'd be a lot better over there. And I was gonna ask,
Him and Scorpio Sky would be a fantastic tag team.
I mean, who would you do an equivalent? I mean, who would you do an equivalent trade? If they were to trade Ricochet for somebody, who would be an equivalent someone to get back that would actually work in the WWE, ecosystem as it is now? Because obviously it's going to be changing.
I wouldn't make the trade if I'm AEW, because I think they have plenty of Ricochets, but maybe Powerhouse Hobbs.
I would take that.
Yeah, I bet you would. I'm trying to think. Yeah, his stock's down a little bit at this point.
No, thank you.
No, I shouldn't say his stock is down. His stock is up a little bit. And Scorpio Sky's stock is down. Ricky Stark's stock is up. Sammy Guevara would probably be too small. But he can talk more. Ethan, that's a good one. Yeah, I mean, just kind of as I talk through this. Yeah, Ethan Page, I think, works. Like, yeah. And Ethan Page just feels like he's a little bit lost in AEW. He deserves better. And, I could see – I think Vince McMahon would like Ethan Page more than necessarily Triple H would, although I think Triple H would like him fine. Anyway, I don't know. But Ethan Page
Tony, get on the call.
How about send Jake Hager back? That might be more of an even trade.
Yeah, the
Anthony Agogo?
Yeah,
Nick Camarado?
No. Well, you know what? I really like Camarado's look. I don't watch Dark, so I haven't seen his work. But the first time I saw him, he's one of those that they say, you know, if you see him in the airport, he grabs your attention. He grabbed my attention the first time I saw him. Granted, he wasn't wearing a shirt and he's hairy as hell, so that might have something to do with it.
Who are you talking about?
Camarado.
Ah, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So I mean, I like I said, I haven't seen his work, so I don't know how much he's improved since the last time he showed up on Dynamite. But the look, he did catch my attention, so he at least has that going for him.
Yeah.
And wait, did you talk about Karrion Kross's promo?
No, we really haven't.
Yeah, because I do have a Wade on Karrion Kross watch, so I am curious what you say.
I wasn't upset watching it, but it still feels like there's mannerisms that are not natural when he talks, and I don't know. It's still haunted house trying to scare little girls. It just doesn't feel like it's going to resonate with like grown men as anything that's authentic. But I mean, it was fine. I'm not quite sure what his character is. You know, like I just want something more than just, you know, platitudes and mystery. A little bit more of an explanation of their backstory. What do you think, Alex? Actually, I'm curious.
I liked the content of last week's promo. I didn't like the delivery of it. But the content was good. Him talking about the Chosen One stuff, that was cool. I was all for that. This week was a step back. That wasn't great. It was kept short. And I'll tell you something. They're doing that on purpose. Like there's a reason that he's only on screen for, you know, 90 seconds to 3 minutes. There's a reason for that, and it's probably a good call.
Yeah. All right, Javier,
the one good thing I would take away from the promo is if I parsed the spooky language correctly, I think he did kind of signpost the fact that any involvement of him with Drew and or Reigns will happen after the pay-per-view. So because it was something along the lines, you know, he kind of seemed resigned that no matter what happens, you know, you will be dealing with me, which kind of makes me think that, you know, by saying that, he's saying that I'm not going to act until after something happens, obviously.
Yeah,
that
okay.
He doesn't have a passport.
Sorry?
A nice callback. I see what you did there, Alex.
I didn't hear it.
Oh, I just made a reference to that. We're not going to not going to Clash at the Castle because I don't think I have. I think my passport expired decades ago.
I think that's pretty much. I got to say, normally these foreign pay-per-views, I'm not really that interested in, but they've done a really good job building. Building up the card and you know, getting me excited for the Clash of the Castle.
I agree. I think they've done a good job. And we got a week to go.
Yeah. All right, so that's pretty much what I got to.
Cool.
I was on Greg Parks on Sunday, I think, because it's been almost an entire week, and I don't know what I was doing yesterday. So I think it was this week, this Sunday. So check it out. And did you listen to it, Wade?
I have not listened to it yet.
There was an email that I think was about 30 minutes long. I think it beat any of the long emails you have ever had on the fix.
Oh, no.
Yeah, someone tweeted at us that whatever hockey game was going on went through two double overtime, like went through a double overtime in the time that took Greg to do the entire thing.
So, oh my God!
So it was.
You're not
it was good.
Telling people. Was it a good email? Okay. Well, I shouldn't say you're not telling people.
No,
it might have been compelling.
I kind of feel like bad calling an email is more like an e-thesis. You know, some interesting stuff because it was about the nature of kayfabe and heels and you know, gray characters and stuff like that, and it was like, you know, a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah.
But definitely, I enjoyed my time with Greg. Just skip. If you do listen to it, skip the first 15 minutes. I may or may not have said something about you. So with that.
Okay.
No,
I'll for sure listen.
It was a joke.
Uh-huh.
All right. With that, have a good night, guys.
Take care, Javier. All right, cool. Anything else, Alex, on the show we did not cover that you made note of or is on your mind?
I have one question, and I think I know the answer, but were you as excited as I was when it sounded like the New Day was going to say goodbye?
Kind of, yes. Yeah. What did you think? I mean, you know, obviously, you know, Xavier was, you know, in a wheelchair. He's going to stand up. That's pro wrestling. But he was still in a boot, thus the blanket over him. Are you buying the Viking Raiders? And do you think, like, the New Day, it felt like, okay, they're being sincere. They didn't take the Viking Raiders seriously enough. By the end, did you think that was sincere or just a BS to lull them into false sense of security and it was a swerve?
No, I liked the beginning of that because I bought it and I thought it was going to be something different, and then it turned into a wrestling trope I've seen a thousand times, so I started to hate it.
Yeah.
It went from this has a lot of promise to a way to do something super predictable that nobody cares about now.
Yeah. Are the Viking Raiders scoring any points with you or Levesque in the way he's presenting them?
Sure. I don't know. They're fine, I guess.
Yeah.
It is what it is. I mean, the problem is right now with the Usos' stranglehold on the tag titles, they're not going to feud with the Viking Raiders. And if they do, it's going to be one and done. And I mean that with pun intended, because that's how the match is going to end too.
Yeah.
Like, I can't get into it when I know that that's the case. Like, I know that if Hit Row gets that spot, they probably won't win, but at least it's more, I don't know, it'll be interesting because it's different.
Yeah. Cool. Anything else?
No, we talked about everything else. We talked about Gunter and Sheamus, and that was the thing I wanted to talk about, so I'm good.
Yeah. I did hear from someone at WWE that Nikki Cross is fine. But it was a, you know, it not that something didn't happen, but that she'll be fine, I guess, is a good clarification. So, okay. I think it was legit grabbing from what I was able to ascertain just through a text, that it was a close call. And I'm not sure if she was selling entirely or not, but ultimately she's fine.
That's good news.
Yeah. Shannon Baszler, they gave her a little vignette too. I mean, I just like little things about Levesque they're sprinkling in. I guess I'll end on that note. Just, you know, what do you think of the Levesque era now, a few weeks in? And is there any kind of more subtle little things or broad brushstroke philosophical things that you like? I mean, I think we had another show without sports entertainment being mentioned. Who would have had on their bingo card August of 2022? You'll hear the word sports entertainment more on AEW television than WWE because of the Jericho Appreciation Society spoofing it. We hear it all the time on AEW, and we don't hear it this month on WWE.
Yeah, they probably need to do something about that because it's not a spoof anymore.
I know. They do have to move on. Yeah.
It ceases being a spoof when the other part of it's not doing it.
Yep.
Anyway, beyond that, well, as far as Triple H goes, it was funny because in one of your Torch Talks with Bill Watts, you asked him a conversation about like who the up and coming bookers were. So Patrick and I got into a conversation. If him and I started a company now, who we would choose? And we both chose Paul Heyman, and then we both went a wrestler route, and he chose William Regal, and I chose Triple H. So, obviously, I'm kind of getting what I want here. And the third person I chose was, and I'm not doing this to suck up, but the third person I chose was actually you. hear me out here.
Yeah.
What Triple H wants and what you've talked about lines up a lot with what I want, and that's what we're finally getting,
yeah,
where there's slightly more of a sports-like feel, there's slightly more of a history feel, there's more emphasis on mid-card titles, the matches are a little bit longer, we're not doing some of these ridiculous things that just make no sense and are dropped a week later. It's all about the small things, and the small things are starting to add up. And I've said to Patrick that, hey, when there's a wholesale change, I'll let you know, and you can come over and start watching again. You know, I'll let you know when the water's safe to jump into.
Yeah.
I don't think we're quite there yet, but I think we're starting to move in that direction. The other thing I want to mention is all the people being brought back. The whole notion that everybody needs to be a top star or they're worthless is it has to stop. He's building some depth that we desperately need. And if 3 of 10 people that he brings in hit, that's a win. If the rest of them just fill out the roster and can help elevate other people, that's exactly what is good for the company. So I'm in the mode of in Triple H, I trust, and I'll give everything a shot. But some of the stuff like Karrion Kross, that's probably the thing I'm the most skeptical about. But again, I'll give it a shot until the guy falls flat on his face.
What are you still waiting to see before you tell Patrick, come on over, water safe?
That's tough to say. There's a lot of things that still feel status quo. Like it's still very much the entertainment-y style program. And like I got him to watch parts of SummerSlam, and he's going to watch part of Clash at the Castle. So, you know, there's some of the sampling going on, and there's stuff he's liked. But at the same time, it's still not quite there. I want to see some of the things that he's working on come to fruition, and we're not in this beginning stage of stories and seeing where people are going to land. I think that's what it is. I think when I can say to Patrick, these are the 5 things that are going on. This is where this guy is. This is where that guy is. And it looks like they're going to go here and here. I think that's when I would feel more safe, because right now we're in a weird holding pattern where we're getting the debuts, but we're not, it's nothing groundbreaking yet. And we're still kind of in the holdover of things that were already planned. Like, I know that he's the one booking it and pushing it now, but the McIntyre Reigns thing was booked before Triple H took over for the most part. So it hasn't fully come over yet.
Yes, I think that's a totally accurate and fair way to look at the changes we've seen so far. I mean, they're just, you can't reinvent everything. There is inertia. This is steering a freighter. But he's done, you know, the absence of irritants, the subtraction of annoyances, and bringing some talent back that were underutilized. And then, like you said, the eye on history with the titles and the championships and a little more elbow grease put into the videos, the Shayna Baszler thing, but especially the Drew thing. And then announcing lineups ahead of time. I mean, there is a checkbox of things that are just absolutely different than Vince McMahon. But it's only the things you can change quickly. There are, I'm sure, long-term changes we just haven't seen yet.
Exactly. And, like, my thing right now is I'm very interested to see what a Royal Rumble is going to look like, and what a WrestleMania card is going to look like. And the other part, too, is Triple H hasn't presided yet over one of these B pay-per-views. Let's see what that's going to look like, too, on the lower end of the spectrum.
And he's not hot-shotting. You know, like, I mean, not that he's even had a chance, because a lot of this was just, like you said, already kind of set up. But it's not like he's doing things impatiently, trying to impress people with, you know, metrics and data points early. He's just making things better, but playing long ball at the same time, which I respect.
No, I agree. He very easily could have, you know, just for sake of argument, he could have had Kevin Owens beat Theory, take the briefcase, cash in on Reigns, be the new champion. You know, he easily could have done something like that just to appease, you know, the internet crowd or whatever. And he chose not to go that route. And I agree with you. I respect that.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Alex, thanks.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate it. Good conversation. This is usually when I say, how can people follow you on Twitter? But I won't do that. Can people just like call you and talk? Can people text you? Want to give out your phone number?
I'll tell you what, they can email our show at torchpasscast@gmail.com, and we will answer there.
And yeah, people might be listening and go, hey, I like this Alex guy, but I can't tell him that on Twitter because he's not there. So now they know how, and they ought to. So, you know, fan club, if people are, you know, still listening as we're winding down here, you know, 2+ hours in, now's your chance to prove you're a super fan and send Alex an email.
Or you can just comment on my report. I prefer that.
That's true. That works. All right, cool. Thanks, Alex. We'll talk to you next time.
Okay, man. Have a good one.
Yep, you too.